Hey, this is Derek Davis from Babylon AD, and you're watching CMS TV.
Chris Aiken Presents, and I, of course, am Chris Aiken, and today we are throwing it back to the good old days of this stuff here, the hair days. It is some of the bands that made it in the era probably shouldn't have. Then there were other bands that should have been a hell of a lot bigger than they were. This would be one of them, one of my favorite bands from the 80s, Babylon AD. They are back with a brand new release called Rome Wasn't Built in a Day, and here to talk all about it is the one, the only, Mr. Derek Davis. Derek, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you, man?
I'm good, man.
All right.
I'm excited to talk to you about two things. One, just in general, because somehow in my thousands of interviews, I've never chatted with you before. I don't know how that's happened.
I don't know.
But what makes it good is that I'm going to say it. Best album under the Babylon AD name. It is so good, man. Congrats.
Really? All right. That's great. I think it is too. That's funny. Great minds think alike.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about it, man. For people that don't, I'll let you explain everything about it, but I'll give my 2-second analysis first. If you liked Babylon AD in the day, you'll love this because it's, you haven't strayed from the formula. You've taken it a little bit heavier. It definitely has a little more crunch to it, but it's definitely Babylon AD. If you like Bango the Bells, you'll like this. It's just like heavier stuff. So that's my take. What is your take, man? Tell us all about Rome Wasn't Built in a Day.
Well, going off of what you just said, I definitely know exactly what you're talking about. There's some stuff that's a little bit heavier, but there's also, I think, a little bit more melodic stuff, too. What I like about this album, it's there's a lot of variations of different kind of structures of songs and different types of songs, you know. It's not all just one thing, crunch, 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 you know.
Right.
I mean, we have 3 ballads on this album, something I would have never thought we, you know, anybody would do. But when we went over all the songs and picked up all our songs and went through everything, we had a choice of about 20 of them. These 3 songs just stood out, you know, and it's like, we got to put these out, man, because who knows when we're going to get a chance again to put them out. So out of the 11 songs, you've got 3 ballads, but they're all, I mean, they're all just really catchy, awesome ballads, you know. So there's a lot of variations on this album, man, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's a cool record. In the 80s, and I don't want to just go into an 80s spin, but in the 80s, you listened to a record, and you could do it either way. You could either listen to it from start to finish, or you could just pick a track here and there, and it really didn't matter. I mean, we all did that. We all were throwing cassettes in and out of our players and throwing them on the seat and throw the next cassette.
Cassettes, huh? How about 8-track?
8-tracks too. Now, I don't think we were doing that with your era of music. I don't think we were still on 8-tracks in 89.
But I do remember.
I do too. I remember having a Purple Rain was the last 8-track that I had. I still remember Prince's Purple Rain. And it was like the very end, but my dad had an 8-track player. Yeah. So it used to drive him crazy. You know, he's listening to like Mac Davis or shit like that. And then I'd throw in Purple Rain and he'd be like, oh, you're not supposed to play that in my car. Crazy times.
I can't even believe cars had 8-tracks in them. That is just nuts, huh?
It is. It's crazy. Long time ago, man. Now, most of the kids watching this today probably have no idea what we're talking about.
They don't even know what the hell we're talking about.
Exactly. No doubt, man. Well, dude, let's dig into the record a little bit. The last record you guys did, Revelation Highway, was what, 5, 6, 7 years ago, something in that range.
Yep.
But since then, you retooled the lineup pretty much completely. What led to changing everybody out? Was it just pandemic changed people's lives, or people changed people's lives, or what?
I wouldn't say it's completely changed people out. John Matthews was actually the original guitar player in the band. Okay. For the first 5 years, you know, he played a little bit on the first album. And then when we made our last album on Frontiers Records, Revelation Highway, he was a guitar player on that too.
Okay.
So what happened was Danny and John are real good friends. They went to high school together and they played in bands together, everything. And that's how Danny got in the band whenever John left the first time. So now it was just in reverse. Danny left the band and John jumped in the band.
Okay.
Because, you know, we're all friends. We all grew up together and everything like that. So there's no hard feelings about any of that kind of stuff. So Ron and John were the original guitar players with me and Jamie and Rob Reed. Well, so Danny wanted to make his own album. So he didn't want to make another record. That was starting about 2017. He was like, look, man, I'm into my own thing. So he's doing his own thing. And by the way, me and Danny are writing new material for a project that's De La Rosa Davis is going to come out next year too.
Okay.
Well, so we're all, you know, family, you know,
right.
But, so then Jamie, last year, 2023, he just decided he wants to do different stuff.
Okay.
So he went on his way, and Rob had some health issues, some really bad health issues that got him to where he basically couldn't play anymore. Okay. So we got a new drummer, Dylan Soto, 23 years old, man, and he knows more about rock metal than I do. It's crazy. Nice. This kid is like an encyclopedia, and he's 23 years old. And a great bass player, Craig Pepe. So, you know, it wasn't hard. It was pretty much we tried him out in one rehearsal, me, John, and Ron, and it was like, you guys are it. We didn't have to search for anybody else, look for anybody else. It was that simple. They just fit, clicked just like a glove.
Now, so, was that before you had written music, or was that after you had songs ready to put together?
Well, so me, John, and Ron had been writing since about 2018, and we had a few demos. But then, you know, the whole COVID thing hit, and it was pretty much what's the point kind of thing. You know, for a couple of years, it just seemed like everything was just screwed up, you know?
Right.
So then maybe about 2 years ago, we talk on the phone and maybe send an idea, this and that. And then when we got approached by Tom Mathers at Paris Records about doing another record, we said, you know, we've already got a few songs in the cam demo. So we just kept writing. You know, we just kept writing and writing and writing and writing. And then we had 20 songs to pick from, and we picked what we felt for this album was the best 11 for this album. Although some of the other material is just as strong, so we're pretty psyched up already about making the next record.
Right.
You know?
Right on, man. Well, dude, you know as well as I do, the business is a very different animal than it was back then.
Yeah, hard
you know, what drive does business at all become a thought now, or is it really a passion? You know, passionate. Exploring your passion.
It's both. The business, I mean, everything has changed. You know that. I mean, who could have thought, you know? I mean, you think about it. When we came out, man, it was like, what the hell's that on your desk? A computer. What the hell's that? You know, big Apple thing, you know? Mm-hmm. What's the internet? You know, I don't even know what the hell the internet is in like 1991 or whatever.
Right.
You know? So everything's changed. But luckily for us, I mean, as people, as human beings, I mean, I kept writing the whole time. I had tons of songs, you know, different types of songs too, that aren't just Babylon AD. They don't go in the Babylon AD camp. You know, they go in my camp, and, you know, whatever soul song, blues song or whatever it may be, you know what I mean? So, The music has changed quite a bit, and the way that people access music has changed quite a bit. And luckily, there's shows like you guys show with the little niches that keep things going on. You know, there's no more big MTV for us or anybody really anymore. Right. You know, they got these TV shows at whatever, American this or that.
Yeah, American Idol or whatever, right?
Yeah, that kind of stuff, you know, and it's like the Gong Show or something. And, hey, that's how you discover your talent, you know. They're just not a gong bong in them, and they suck, you know. That's about the only thing.
Right.
You know, so it's sad in a way. It's sad, you know, but at the same time, you know, I think good music pokes its head through. And luckily enough, there's people that are our age and still enjoy the music, and maybe even more so because it takes you back to your high school days. You know, when you were young and coming up, and all of a sudden here's your band 20 years later, the same band that you always love, and they got a new record out, and you're like, wow, man, this takes me back. But you know, this is just as good, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Do you think that this kind of music can come back? And let me explain why I'm asking the question before you answer it. I think that there's still tons of fans that like it, and not just old people like us, but like, you know, I think there's tons of people, kids, 20 years old, 25 years old, that were raised on it and would love to have this kind of music. But I think what's missing is, just like you said, we had major outlets. We had major radio stations. Record stores would line people up 10 miles down the street to do meet and greets and stuff. MTV obviously was such a huge thing. It's so splintered now. I'm not sure that you could do that again.
Well, we'll just have to see, right?
Right.
We just get on the ride and go. Like you said, it's like a beast, an animal. You got to try to ride it. But, you know, it's more of a niche now. And I think for most of us musicians that lived through the 80s and the whole Hollywood thing and everything like that, and the MTV and the videos and everything that went along with it and all the touring and everything, it's still, if you're still doing it because it's still in your blood, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I tell people, I said, this is the best hobby in the world, man. You know, it's not a full-time job like it was one time, but it is the best freaking hobby you could do. It's kind of like, you know, maybe you're Wilt Chamberlain or something like that, and you're 60 years old and you get to go play basketball still,
right?
You know, on a smaller level, but it's still just as fun, you know.
Right on, man. Well, I'll tell you what, Derek, let's dig into the record a little bit. I always start with my favorite song on the record. For me, for this record, it's White Hot Bullet.
Just really?
That riff, the riff especially, is so killer.
All right. And that makes me feel good because I wrote that riff.
Oh, there you go. And I will tell you this. You turn it up in a car and it just booms.
Yeah.
It's so, you know, it's like arena style. And I think that's exactly what you're going for.
Yeah, but I was thinking in my head, I wanted to make that real, real heavy arena style. Exactly. You hit it right on the head, man.
Right on, man. Well, tell us about that song, man. What's it about and how'd it come together?
You know, I started fooling around with the riff for about a week or so, and I just kept perfecting it and making it different. That is a very hard riff to do, man. It was tough for John and Ron to learn it. It took like multiple sessions for us to get that lick down, man. It's a tough one for some reason. I don't know why. It's just an odd kind of fingering. It's not like Bangle the Bells or Hammer Swings Down where you could pick it up in like 5 minutes and start jamming it. You know, it's got a lot of pull-offs and shit. Anyways, so the song is basically kind of like fiction. It happened kind of fiction and something that I read. You know, it's basically about the Al Green story or whatever. You know, the woman gets pissed off and gets shook up and pulls out a gun, and the poor guy's on his knee.
Right.
As he's got a white hot bullet coming at him, and he's begging her to say, "Hey, you know." That white hot bullet from the gun is, you know, basically not for me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, it's kind of like that, you know?
Right on. The other tune I wanted to ask you about is the title track. Another great one. Tell us about Rome Wasn't Built in a Day.
That was a song that I had for maybe about 2 years, like the music too. And I had some different lyrics to it, a different chorus, totally different chorus. And then, one day I was thinking to myself, you know, this is a good song, but I think I can make it better, you know? And I hadn't listened to it for about 6 months. So I went in my studio and I just turned off all the vocals. No more lyrics, no nothing. And since I hadn't listened to it in about 6 months, it was like a brand new palette to write to, you know? So I came up with the title, Rome Wasn't Built in a Day. And then I said, well, what's this song about? You know, because I dug the title in my head. I was like, Rome wasn't built in a day. I started singing to myself, you know, getting the melody going. And I came up with the lyrics and the melody, and the song kind of just kind of took its own life form, you know?
Right. No doubt, man. Mm-hmm. Other thing I wanted to tell you, and I'm sure you know this, and I'm sure I have to imagine people are telling you this in interviews, outside of the music itself, the mix on this thing is superb. Absolutely a great mix. Who worked with you on that, or did you guys do it yourself? Or
you yeah. are the third person that has told me that.
Okay.
And I'm really flattered because I did it.
Oh, there you go.
I did the whole thing all by myself in my studio. And I took a long time, man. Some songs I mixed shit 7 times.
Right.
I would think it's like, this is the masterpiece mix. And then I'd go back 2 days later and I go, ah, shit. You know what? I think the guitars on the left side got to come up a little bit. It got down to that minute, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or the background vocals. Oh, man, how come I thought that I could hear them really well? Now I don't. Now I think they're buried. You know, I went through all that kind of stuff. And then you also get the self-doubt, like, is this right or am I going crazy, you know? So then I would bring over people that are associated with the band and have been for years. And they'll tell us, basically road crew guys and people that are my family, things like that, that I've listened to everything I've ever done. And I don't know, man. I think you should pull up this or pull up that and I never thought about that. Yeah, okay. I'll pull up that, you know, cowbell on this part or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I'd give it to the band and then I get their 2 cents. And it some songs like Looking for a Heartbeat, that song, I think it's the 5th, 6th song on the album. That's a very melodic tune. I mixed that one take in about 20 minutes. That was it. I'd listen to it every day thinking, well, I'm going to do something, right? I'd go listen to it, and I go, all right, I'm going to have to mix this again. I know it. And I'd listen, and I go, shit, I couldn't think about what I would do. I'd come back 2 days later, listen to it again. Shit, the snare sounds perfect. You know, I couldn't find anything. And so what I usually do is when I'm mixing, I that's what I'm doing, man. I'm looking for stuff to make better. Right. You know, sonically, right side, left side, where am I putting things? That's what I'm doing. And we got lucky enough to get Dave Donnelly from DNA Mastering to master the record. And he mastered it, and he gave it to me, and I said, this is, you know, it wasn't as good as I hoped it to be, you know?
Okay.
I was kind of surprised because he's done everybody, you know, Slash, Motley Crue.
Right.
I mean, he's got a history. He's got Grammys and stuff like that. It felt just a little thin compared to the mixes that I gave him. So I asked him just to add a little bit of low end 80 Hertz and a couple of different things. And sure enough, man, the second time he gave us the tracks, it was like, oh, this is perfect, man. It sounds great. And so then of course, what do? A-B them, right? I'm listening to the WAV file mixes and I'm listening to the mastering. And I'm really just sitting there like a Swingali guy, you know, like, well, what can I make better? Pretty soon it became obvious, like, I really don't think I can make anything any better, man. So it's going to have to go like it is, you know, that kind of thing.
Are you do you mix with your ear or mix with your eye? Meaning looking at the WAV and
I don't look at any of that shit. No, okay. I mean, it's up there going by and all that kind of shit. I listen to it with my ears. Okay. And I rarely ever cut and paste. Or if I sing, I'm not one of those guys who like, well, the background vocals sounded perfect. And then I'll fly them in. I don't do that. I just sing them again. Right. You know what I mean? Like old school, like you used to have to do. Because I think that you have more feeling when you do that. You know, everybody nowadays kind of what you'd say cheats. So you get the drum riff. Then you go, oh, that's a great drum riff for about a minute and a half. All right, cut. Let's copy and paste that to the next part. And let's copy and paste this to the next part. I don't like doing any copy and pasting. And you can ask the guys, even when they're recording their guitars, because I do all the engineering also. It's like, well, can we just cut this part and do because it's so good? Nope. Do it over. oh man, okay. Well, I don't know if I could do that riff as good as I did. Well, let's see if you can. You know what I mean? So, and luckily enough, I'm working with talented cats that could pull it off. And a lot of times you'll think to yourself, well, that's a good take, man. We're keeping that one. And then I'll say, well, let me put you on another track. Let's just try it one more time and see what happens. And all of a sudden, bam, there's something magic right there. You know?
Right. No, so, right on, man.
Yeah.
Well, Derek, one of the things, you know, I'm sure you're aware of this. I know fans are aware of this. So many of your contemporaries that you came up with, same era, they're still out there touring. Let's be honest, they shouldn't be. You know, I don't want to name any names specifically, but there's a lot of them that don't sound like they did.
And they don't look like they did either.
Yeah, well, that too. But I mean, I think you could get away with not having the look 30, 40 years later, but you still got to have the sound. And you could put this record against, you know, the first record, and I don't think anybody's going to listen to it and go, yeah, this is degraded or this is not as good. I mean, you sound the same 40 years later. It's not an easy vocal style. How have you been able to avoid what so many others out there have not been able to avoid?
People ask me that all the time, and I really freaking don't know. You know, all I know is that I went through a transition period between albums and stuff on my journey of music, you know, like 20 years ago, or whatever, I hated the blues, man. I couldn't stand it. Somebody, you know, I always see some white guy up there going, dun, 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 dun. And every, you know, bar band playing some blues song, it sucks, three chords, you know what I mean? And then I started listening to guys like Son House and Elmore James. I was like, whoa, okay, well, I get it. You know, they just don't know what the frick they're doing. These guys that are doing the blues, they're not doing any good. But there was cats like Stevie Ray Vaughan who were, you know, masters. So then, you know, I got into the blues and I started listening to some of the old blues guys, you know, especially Son House and those kind of cats that are, you know, this had that gravelly kind of voice. And then I started listening to, I've always listened to soul music, but I really got into like Bobby Womack, Al Green, Marvin Gaye, James Brown. I went through that whole phase for a long time. And so I started picking up more different ways to sing. Cause I grew up listening to, and trying to sing like Steven Tyler or Sammy Hagar, you know,
okay.
Maybe John Waite, put those three voices together. In my head, I was thinking, if I could put these three voices together, man, I'll have a good voice, you know? So here I am, 15, 14 years old, screaming, I'm back in the saddle again with your voice cracking. But man, I got to say, man, I must've screamed that song a million times till I fucking one day I did it.
Right.
And I couldn't believe it, you know?
So good, man.
Journey, man.
Hell yeah. Well, Derek, I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you a little quick story. When I was roughly 20 was when your band was happening, when Bango the Bells was out. And I must have, you know, don't hate me for it, but I must have copied and given copies of your tape away 100 times to you know, to, because I mean, you remember how it was in that time, man. If you knew a band that somebody else didn't know, you wanted them to know.
Yeah,
you know, it was not territorial. You wanted everybody to, those same kids that were listening.
Like, I found this.
Yeah.
You guys should check it out. You guys are going to like it too. I did the same exact thing.
And I swore to everybody I knew that your band was going to be one of those bands. And, you know, I honestly, to this day, and there's no slam on either of the bands I'm going to name, but the bands like Poison or Warrant or whatever. Yeah. Did not think they were as good as Babylon AD. At least music, album for album, I did not think they were, and I still don't think they were.
Thank you.
And you guys had all the pieces. You had the look, you had the sound, you had the movie soundtrack. I mean, like, all of the stars aligned except the one star, whatever that is, that took you to that super stratosphere.
Yeah.
Why do you think, you know, I mean, you lived it. What was it that stopped you guys?
I think there was two things. The first thing was, you know, we were on Arista Records and Clive Davis signed us, and Clive Davis is, you know, I mean, he's a god in the music industry. He signed everybody, and he makes sure he let you know it too. You know, Derek, I signed Janis Joplin. I signed Aerosmith. I signed, you know, he'll tell you. He also told me five times, you know, like, okay, I know, Clive, you know. The problem was with Arista Records was they didn't have the right promotional type of record company. You know, they weren't like Geffen or Atlanta or something like that. They just didn't have the personnel. So we were the first rock band to get signed by them. So they didn't, they had new personnel who, you know, they had Kenny G and Dionne Warwick and Whitney Houston. They were geared to that. So when we came along, the radio people in the promotion department, they didn't know what to do. But you don't know that when you're getting signed. You're thinking, hey, we're going to be the only rock band, man. And we're, you know, and Clive said this and Clive said that. That's all you're thinking. You know what I mean? Little did you know, man, you know, it's still a business, man. And a lot of people, you know, it's, you got to rub elbows with the right people, you know? So I think it was a matter of that. And I think timing, I think we came out about a year too late, you know? So, and then of course, Nirvana, well, our second album came out. I remember in the studio with Tom Werman and somebody said, hey man, you hear this new band called Nirvana? They're really good, man. Check out this video. And I walked in, I stood there and I was in this recording studio. I was watching this video. I go, wow, that's a freaking awesome video. That's a cool song. You know, and all of a sudden, within maybe 3 months, hair bands are out. Right. You know, like, what's a hair band? They got long hair. What's, you know, I didn't freaking know, man. You know, oh, okay, now I get it. You know, it's like it took me a while to adjust my thinking. Hair band, you know.
So, right on, man.
Yeah.
Too good. I did want to ask you, too, you know, while we're back in the old days, I wanted to ask about the Kid Goes Wild video, because that's just... That is every bit of 80s excess that you could possibly have. It's a giant video. You got RoboCop in the video. You got Sam Kinison. Like, every 80s thing was going on in that video. Tell me about that video and that video shoot, man.
Well, I'll tell you about that video shoot, but getting back to that last question for 1 second.
Oh, yeah.
That might have messed us up, too, because Arista had told us that we're going to do our first single, Hammer Swings Down, then Bangle the Bells. Then we were going to do Desperate, our ballad, right? Mm-hmm. And Clive Davis, I mean, he loved that song. He loved it. And he was like, I'm going to make you guys as big as Aerosmith, man. This is going to be as big as Dream On. You know, he'd say shit like that, you know. And all of a sudden, Orion Pictures approached us and said, hey, to the record company, we'll pay for the video and use the song for the trailer. And we want to use the song Kid Goes Wild. Mm-hmm. And the band was like, well, I thought we were going to do Desperate. It was like within a couple days, right? We were already getting to gear up for radio for Desperate. And they go, well, let's pivot. Let's do the Kid Goes Wild thing. Cause they're going to pay for record company. Like, what the hell? They're going to pay for everything. You know? Yeah. So we're like, okay, we're going to do Desperate, right? Yeah. We're going to do the ballad for sure. So then we did Kid Goes Wild and everything seemed like it was going pretty good. And then we go back to the record company. You know, say 3 months later, whatever, after Kid Goes Wild is out with RoboCop. And we say, okay, you know, we're ready to do Desperate, right? And they're like, you know, man, the record's been out a year. And the guys at the promotion department just want you guys to move on and make a new album. Oh, man, you talk about five pissed off guys in a management team. Boy, we wish we could have took the whole Kid Goes Wild thing back. Because at the time, if you remember... Sorry, man. I got a bit of a cough. A lot of bands were doing, you know, Extreme had a big hit out. Mr. Big had a big hit. The ballads were big. Sure. And we had the big ballad right there just waiting. But it's like, let's go Kid Goes Wild first. So that was another thing that kind of messed us up in a while. But as far as being on the set and being in the movie and all that other kind of stuff and fun. Funny stuff, the guys that wore the RoboCop suit whenever, you know, I only met, what's his name, the actor one, twice,
Peter,
actually.
Peter Sellers?
No. Not Peter Sellers. Yeah. Peter Sellers, that's good. He's a Pink Panther, right?
Right.
Ooh, you're talking ancient right there, dude.
Yeah, I know. I'm old.
You know what's funny is, so I met Peter Weller, you know, on the video suit. And then about 20 years later, I met him again. And I couldn't believe it where I met him. I was in Italy in this beach town called Positano. And I'm walking with my wife, you know, down this beautiful, elegant, you know, cobblestone streets, you know, down to the beach. I look right next to me. I go, Peter? And he goes, hey, like, you know, he didn't know me. And I go, I'm Dirk Davis. I was in the band Babylon AD, you know, kid goes, he goes, oh yeah, I remember that. So here he was like on a vacation with his grandson,
right?
You know, in Positano. So we sit and talk for about 5 minutes, but it's just weird how the world is and how life is, you know?
Sure. It is crazy, man. All right, man. Well, let's see here. Let's talk about any touring plans. Are you guys planning to get out there and tour for Rome Wasn't Built in a Day? Is that something that's even feasible to do these days, or
so,
what?
So right now we have five gigs shows booked. We're playing Monsters of the Mountain. We're doing some clubs, and we're doing the Whiskey on June 7th. That's gonna be really fun. Playing the Whiskey is always great because it's like, you know, hallowed ground, you know.
Right.
And we got all kinds of offers coming in all the time. I can't keep up with them really. My management and the booking agents are doing all that kind of stuff. I know we're going to go to Europe later, either this year or early next year. They're already got dates for that. But, I've been kind of concentrating on just doing stuff like I'm doing with you, you know, and, the record's now finished, and, Wrecking Machine is out. The single's out. It just went to radio too. And from what I've told the radio people, say it's already doing phenomenal within 2 days. They're like, wow, this is getting a lot of placements. So that's good. Rome Wasn't Built in a Day will be our second video and our second single. And then we're shooting for Sometimes Love Is Hell to be our third single. That'll be our big ballad, you know. So, right, you know, we have a little bit more control than we used to have, you know, with a major record label, you know. That's kind of cool.
Do you like having that control, or do you miss having somebody to kind of guide the ship a little bit?
No, I've never liked anybody to guide the ship. I got to tell you, man, some of the video treatments that we would get back in the day, like, let's say a little short story, like Bangle the Bells, right? Mm-hmm. We get the treatment and the record company goes, oh, this is great. And I'm looking at the treatment going, what the hell? Are you fucking crazy? Got us running around in a pinball machine with pinballs hitting us and flippers hitting us and all this shit. I'm like, you guys got to be out of your mind, man. You know? So then they give us a treatment for the next treatment, you know, that they go, this is great. And it's the same exact treatment that we used, right? And I said, okay, we're in a game show. Now we're in a game show, Bangle the Bells. And they bang a bell, right? And this is ridiculous, man. I said, the only way this will work, and I did my own treatment. It was the first time I ever did a treatment. But I created everything in the future. I said, okay, this has got to be after like a nuclear war. This is, you know, this is how I described everything to the recommendation. Oh, yeah. Now, it didn't come out that great in the video, but at least it was a lot darker than the original would have been. And so the funny thing I wanted to tell you was, so the Bangle the Bells thing, we're getting hit by flippers and all this shit, right, in the treatment. 2 years later, I see the same exact treatment and another band, a friend of mine, Baton Rouge, and they're getting hit by pinballs. It's the same exact treatment. It just went around to all the bands. Like, hey, who will take this one? You know? We like making our own decisions, man. I think we make a little bit, you know, better ones.
Right on, man. Well, you're certainly making good ones as far as the songs you chose. Rome Wasn't Built in a Day, new record from Babylon AD, is if you liked them then, you'll like them now. That's about the best review I can give. Right, it really is a great record. Derek, where should we tell people to go to actually buy something? We here tell everybody, it's okay if you want to stream it, but buy something. Buy a hat, buy a shirt, buy a vinyl, whatever, but buy something.
Well, you know, like right now, ParisRecords.com has bundles of t-shirts and CDs available. Pre-order. Okay. But it's all over the internet for pre-order. Merch Bar. I mean, almost everywhere you go right now, if you looked it up, you could find it. Or they could just go to our website, BabylonADBand.com, to get a little bit of information on the band. I'm just hoping that everybody keeps following us and you know, we could play bigger gigs and have as much fun as we did back in the day, you know, which we seem to be having.
Right on, man. Well, one more time, the album is Rome Wasn't Built in a Day. It is Babylon AD. And Derek, thanks so much for joining me here on Chris Aiken Presents.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Awesome, man.
The internet has changed the game to where you don't need millions of dollars to own your own viable radio or TV station. A good concept and a great streaming platform are all you need. We've got that platform for you. I'll Get Drunk Noise is the best place to stream your very own online radio or TV station. We offer 24/7 scheduling, on-demand options, the ability to go live on your channels, and much, much more. Sell and plug in your own advertisements within your programming as you see fit. Our stations are fully licensed and legal. It's all here for you, so get started today. Just visit www.uncontrolledNoise.com and let us know you are ready to broadcast. Uncontrolled Noise, your best place for online radio and television stations.